from the Hebrew Bible, 2 Kings chapter 5. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him victory had been gained by Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him to say, "Go, wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." But Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?" So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, 'Wash and be cleansed'?" So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him. And his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the prophet. He stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept a gift from your servant." The prophet answered, "As surely as God whom I serve lives, I will not accept a thing." And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. And the gospel reading about the baptism of Jesus is from Matthew chapter 3, starting at verse 13. Then Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to be baptized by John. But John tried to deter him, saying, "I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me?" Jesus replied, "Let it be so now. It is proper for us to do this, to fulfill all righteousness." Then John consented. As soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. And at that moment, heaven was opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." And from Revelations chapter 22, Eden restored. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations, for the word in scripture, for the word among us, for the word within us. We give thanks.
It's my privilege this morning to talk about rivers, and I wanted to do that in the context of not only this month of creation, but also where does it fit, where do rivers fit in our sort of current understanding of ecosystems and ecosystem management. And we use a whole raft of new words, really. And so to begin, I thought it's important that we just set that in context. And I'd like to sort of paraphrase some words that Jeremy Butman wrote from the School of Philosophy in New York. And he talks about how the origins of the environmental movement in the West began with the emergence of Romanticism in the late 18th century. In this version, environmentalism was born as the good twin to the evil of industrialization. Today we talk about ecological sustainability and environmental preservation, and we typically still understand them in terms of a battle between nature and industry. And I want to come back to some of those thoughts and words, I guess, during this short presentation. And Descartes, in effect, reduced the natural world to its mathematical form. And in doing so, he set the stage for a purely scientific, technological worldview, cleared the way for the domination of nature by industry, and prepared philosophy for Nietzsche's dramatic declaration of the death of God. What is given less consideration is that as the Christian God retreated after Descartes, the attributes traditionally ascribed to God, goodness, perfection, and permanence, were in different ways transposed onto the body of nature. Cruel nature is transformed into the Garden of Eden. This identification of nature with the Christian notion of the divine is one of the foundations of environmental sustainability. And so I'll come back at the end to just this thought about what is sustainability and what is sustainable. And so let's just focus on rivers. And today we celebrate rivers and their place in the ecosystem. That's interesting. We won't do that, we won't go backwards, we'll go forwards. Rivers, in fact, on this slide, for those who can see it, play a very small part in the magnitude of water on the planet. Most of the planet, 97% of the water on the planet, is contained in the oceans, and of course that's salt water. And so the small fraction, 3% of that water, 3% of water on the planet, is non-saline. And then most of the fresh water is contained actually in ice and in glaciers and ice sheets. And so a very small fraction of that, some 1% of the fresh water, is actually available as flowing water. And indeed, that's sequestered under land and in lakes and in the soil. And a small fraction, 1% of that, is actually in rivers. And so for New Zealand, and I kept this week most of the articles from the Dominion Post and last Sunday's Sunday Times of issues on water. And it plays, and of course not only about the elections, but I thought it's interesting, you know, even a one-pager in the Dominion Post, collaborative approach key in Canterbury fresh waters. And so I just run through some of the issues that face New Zealand with water before we look at some of the international issues. And so for New Zealand, of course, the big issue in general is seasonal supply. And it means, therefore, not only the storage, but also water quality. And we see it in the hydro lakes with so-called dry winters, when there are then the threats of power cuts, when the flows into the lakes are too small. In agriculture and all the discussions in the Hawke's Bay about water storage, that there isn't enough water in summer, and of course the runoff contamination, not only during the year, but of course with reduced flows, it becomes a huge issue. We have, even in Wellington, of course, water restrictions, when you can water your lawn, when vigils last week, and talked about last week in the paper, the anniversary of the Havelock contamination with E. coli in the town water supply. And of course we have the demise of Environment Canterbury trying to apportion water rights to irrigators but also to town supply. But on the global scene of things, of course, this is the driver of concern. It is the change in the world's human population. And you can see the exponential climb to now we're somewhere around 7 billion people on the planet. And also what is also extremely important is that we now are a planet where urban dwellers outnumber those in the rural setting. Happened about 2010, 2011, this turnover. And indeed, it's predicted that the next billion people on the planet, 95% of them will be town dwellers, not in the country. So there's this move to disassociate ourselves from the issue of the rural area. And I think in terms of the screen of slides that I have, the bigger issue for us all really is that not only have the withdrawals of water from a variety of reservoirs and from aquifers increased over time, as this graph shows, but actually it's increased at 2.5 times the population growth. And so our use and use of water has changed drastically. And that's a 20th century phenomenon. I remember talking about that 3 years ago when we did a similar talk of how we've changed from it being normal to have a bath once a week. Why was that? Because there wasn't enough hot water, and so it was a big issue to draw hot water or heat up water especially for a bath on Saturday or Sunday, usually Saturdays after midday when work was finished, and relaxation on Sunday. And of course now we've got, as those who are involved in the B&B business here in Wellington will find, that people who come to stay actually would like 3 sets of towels a day, because you need to shower three times a day. And so that's the difference between, you know, it was okay. And from a medical point of view, it's still okay actually, and much better to wash your hair once a week than once a day. But the pressure of industry, of course, to sell all the toners and gels and whatever, fits with using water. And so that really becomes the big issue for us all to think about. And although we're not India, and this isn't the Johnsonville line into Wellington, I see Modi this week, the president in India, signed finally a new edict to try and join 60 rivers in India, 60 rivers, so that you can control the flow for agriculture, but also decrease flows in rivers because of flooding. And this isn't the Hutt line coming in the morning to Wellington either, but the congestion of both traffic and what that means in terms of runoff from roads. As we build more roads, and these roads, the water goes quickly to the rivers, of course results in not only the river pollution, but of course the use of rivers. And here in Varanasi, of course, the sacred Ganges has special significance. And so this isn't the Hutt River scene, but of course it is a scene in other parts of the planet where not only waters have special significance, but of course it's the issue of they are, in the natural geographic system, drains, of course. That is, we drain excess water through rivers to the sea. We renew the deltas traditionally, so the big places on the Nile Delta, the Mekong Delta, the Ganges Delta was where agriculture was, because it was the soil was refreshed each year with the flooding and the new sediment. And of course now we have those areas populated, and of course that's subject to flooding. So it's not to forget that rivers are the natural drainage system. That's why inland cities are built on them. That's the problem in Beijing. Beijing doesn't have a big river. It was built as a north fortress in China in a basin without a river. And so, of course, it has huge drainage and pollution problems. We see in this week's paper about the Volga, the largest river in Russia, is now so polluted that it's virtually impossible in its length to fish. And it's a huge issue for the whole of Russia. And of course in New Zealand, the discussion of course on runoff, particularly in the summertime, labelled at the intensive dairying, but also as we create more subdivisions, more hard roofs, more hard roads, the runoff increases, and so we get localised flooding, as we've just had in Christchurch and in parts of the North Island. And so the issue, and I guess the message from this brief discussion, is about we need to nurture the rivers. We need to understand their place in the ecosystem and, of course, place value on them. And so that balance in life is a compromise. The balance between having economic welfare in New Zealand and what we do with the broader ecosystem is something for us all really to be aware of and to discuss. And so, you know, what does it mean to have a swimmable river? The attributes placed on our streams under the latest accord was whether it was wadeable or swimmable. It's all a matter of definition, I guess. This image from the Ganges. And so my final message is we're starting to see that we really need to nurture and value rivers as part of our ecosystem, but compromise is going to be the key. We need to have a balance. We need to be able to live in society. And so not only do we need to pray for the future, we need to think about what it means. I like this slide in the context of triple bottom line and in sort of words that St Andrew's people could reflect on. The social component is usually in the triple bottom line as the top of this, but it's about people and social equity. And of course, under the environment, as it's normally depicted in such a Venn diagram, the planet is about environmental stewardship. And of course, we can't survive if we don't have enterprises that make a profit that allow sustainability in the business sector to invest in the future and therefore to pay taxes that provides for the services that we need in society. And so, as I said, it's a balance. It's a balance between those three fields. And so between people and the planet, it's things we need to look at it and see what's bearable for the planet, but also for people. What's equitable for people and for an economic system that actually functions? And what's viable? And those three sets merge to give us then a feeling for what is sustainable. Or if we see it in a more traditional slide, that would be for many companies also the way in which they do analysis for triple bottom line accounting. It's the social environment, it's the intersection of social, environmental, and economic well-being that gives us something that is sustainable and in sustainability. So Wendy's going to read us a thought piece.
So this reading is by Aidan Chambers from his book, This Is All, The Pillow Book of Cordelia Ken. A pillow book is a very old idea, goes back to classical Japanese literature more than 1,000 years ago, and it was a personal journal. And so this is really from the personal journal of Cordelia Ken. I thought, how lovely and how strange a river is. A river is a river, always there, and yet the water flowing through it is never the same water and is never still. It's always changing and it's always on the move. And over time, the river itself changes too. It widens and deepens as it rubs and scours, gnaws and kneads, eats and bores its way through the land. Even the greatest rivers, the Nile and the Ganges, the Yangtze and the Mississippi, the Amazon and the great grey, green, greasy Limpopo, they must have been no more than trickles and flickering streams before they grew into mighty rivers. Are people like that? I wondered. Am I like that? Always me. Like the river itself, always flowing, but always different. Like the water flowing in the river, sometimes walking steadily along andante, sometimes surging over rapids, furioso, sometimes meandering with hardly any visible movement, tranquillo, lento, pianissimo, sometimes gurgling with pleasure, sometimes sparkling in the sun, sometimes appassionato, sometimes misterioso, sometimes staccato, sometimes vivace, and always, I hope, amoroso. Do I change like a river, widening and deepening, eddying back on myself sometimes, bursting my banks sometimes when there's too much water, too much life in me, and sometimes dried up from lack of rain? Will the I that is me grow and widen and deepen? Or will I stagnate and become an arid riverbed? Will I allow people to dam me up and confine me so that I flow only where they want? Will I allow them to turn me into a canal to use for their own purposes? Or will I make sure I flow freely, coursing my way through the land and ploughing a valley of my own?
And now, just to contemplate, in fact, with the help of Schmettner's music, the rivers of the planet. This one through Prague, the biggest river in the Czech Republic.